Seven.
All right, and ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Team Rocket Podcast. I'm Jesse, this is James, going through this for the third time because our recording program has decided to shit the bed on us for the fifth time,
like, for real, it's been a couple times.
Yeah, there's a reason episode two has been in hiding for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by years, we mean a few weeks.
I was about to say years, dang, where was I?
Episode 2 apparently has transversed a time-space continuum loop, and...
it's ended up somewhere in the far, far reaches of space, probably out there with Frieza.
Yeah,
something like that. Okay. Something like that.
Yeah, something, really, there you go. Anyway, Jesse, this is James. We are the Team Rocket Podcast, and this is episode 6. My God, we've...
6?
Yeah, we've done it. We've made it... We've made it to 6 episodes. We haven't capsized, but apparently I have spring fever.
Yeah, you have something. I'm going to say you have dumb. That's what I'm going with.
Gonosyphilates?
No, you have dumb. D-U-M. Dumb.
I've always had that.
I've always had
dumb combined with a case of the derps.
With a heavy case of the derps, which you can never, ever, ever get rid of, no matter how hard
you try. That is true. You cannot cure that. You can live with it. There's medication to live with it. They can treat it.
Yeah.
But when you have the derps, you got the derps for life.
Yeah, it never goes away.
Life, bro.
And yeah, it's an odd segue. Guess what tonight is about, Jesse?
I don't know. Could it be that one thing that I said we were going to do on Thursday, but we didn't do it on Thursday because apparently we are really bad at keeping with the schedule?
Yeah, we're really bad at the schedule. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is the survival horror episode. This is the episode that you have waited for. This is your episode. This is the episode where I'm going to literally sit here and shut the fuck. That is my one allotted F-bomb.
You get one F-bomb. If you say it again, I'm going to have to take away your mouth.
Well, if I say it again, we're in R-rated territory. What's the rule on that in movies? Is it like, how many?
Say it once. It's either once or twice. It's some weird stuff like that.
Usually it's safe to assume you get it once.
Yeah, so everybody gets one.
So I have used, my God, I blew our allotted F-bombs.
You use your lifeline within the first, like, minute and a half. Jesse, you're the real MVP. You're the real MVP.
We ain't winning $1 million. We are not going to be the millionaire.
Man, sponsors, bro.
Oh, God. Mad Cats, please help us.
Please help us.
Where are you, Mark Man?
I've been praying for that thing since like ninth grade. Please.
Before we get into the survival horror topic, there is one thing I did want to talk about. It actually popped up today, and I forgot all about this. The game that was one of the original kings of controversy in video games, Mortal Kombat. I believe the 10th iteration came out today. And apparently, this release crapped the bed.
It did?
Apparently.
Like, how? What happened?
Apparently, the PC release did not preload correctly for a lot of people. It had a similar issue to that of GTA.
Gotcha.
Apparently, the netcode is questionable.
That's like a patch.
Oh, but it, and apparently... PS4 users really got the shaft on this one. So for those of you that don't know, the PS4 has the ability to... You have the ability to use PS3 arcade sticks on the PS4. But a lot of companies won't allow it. They won't put in the code.
Yeah.
The developers behind Skullgirls Lab Zero created a special patch, like a driver patch, that allowed these sticks to be compatible, or PS3 sticks to be compatible with the PS4. Just plug them in, you're good to go.
Yeah, as it should be.
And if you actually play Skullgirls, I think on PS4, I want to say, there's no issue. You will be able to play fine, all is good.
Yeah.
They licensed this driver out to NetherRealm Studios for use with MK4, or MKX, excuse me. Wow,
MK4? Did you go back in time?
Yeah, let's not talk about MK4. But no, apparently they licensed it for Mortal Kombat 10, MKX, whatever you'd like to call it, so that a lot of the players wouldn't have to go out and buy bunch of new sticks, and God knows, again, a PS4 stick, which is in high demand right now, is at least $150 to $200.
Damn.
For a lot of people, that is a serious investment, in all seriousness.
Yeah, that is a major... I wouldn't even buy one right now.
I know. And for the record, I have... I actually have two PS3 sticks. One is a Mad Catz Street Fighter, or Super Street Fighter 4 Tournament Edition, which has been wall modded to hell and back. The other one is a red and white Quan Before with a cross compatibility between PS3 and Xbox 360. It's actually my baby. I love that stick to death. If I'm not playing on stick, what I'm actually using is a Sega Saturn controller with a USB connector that was compatible with the PS3.
I mean, that's all you need.
It's a nice pad. So they licensed this driver out to NetherRealm Studios. NetherRealm Studios, where they were going to implement it, and it was actually a cool thing to do. It was like, that's a nice gesture. Well, apparently, they made some modifications to the driver.
And it fucked it up. Oh, my God.
Well, that's number two. Congratulations, James. We are now in R-rated territory. We are now officially, we have earned our explicit tag once again. iTunes is going to have their way with us, man. Anyway, so if you decide to plug in a PS3 stick in your PS4 to play Mortal Kombat, apparently you have to have a Bluetooth controller registered to it as well.
Okay.
But it's one controller per stick.
What? This is why we get nice things. Like,
this was not in the... According to the heads over at Lab Zero posted on NeoGAF concerning this issue, and basically threw NetherRealms under the bus on this one. They basically said, our driver doesn't work like that. This wasn't our doing. This is not how that was supposed to work. That was on them. So and get this, though. The game also has vibration function. Guess what the vibration runs through?
What does it run through?
Of course, the PS4 controller.
Man.
Apparently the PS4 buttons also can double trigger. So if your PS4 controller starts shaking or something, it can actually cause misinputs. If it just, you know, depending on how you have it sitting, if a bumper hits wrong or something. At least that is what I have been reading. So that is all not good. That is lots of bad.
They're poor NetherRealm. They just like screwed themselves. The game looks beautiful. It plays really well, supposedly, as long as you use a regular controller. But
I was gonna say, from what I've heard, you know what? I haven't played it. This is all speculation. I have not personally played it, to be perfectly honest. I'm still kind of burned by NetherRealm Studios over Injustice, which...
Get over it, nerd.
I mean, my problem with NetherRealms, all those games play really stiff. They just feel kind of... I don't know if clunky is the right word, but they just feel rigid. There's really no smoothness to them. And I have yet to play a Mortal Kombat or NetherRealms game that hasn't felt like that. Street Fighter feels smooth. Marvel has felt smooth. King of Fighters 13 has felt smooth. Guilty Gear smooth. Persona smooth. NetherRealms feels like I am in control of a brick with arms and legs.
I just think you're bad at it. That's why you hate on it.
Man,
that's
probably, just me. I mean, you're probably right. I am bad at Mortal Kombat. I'm probably also bad at Street Fighter and Marvel.
Those games actually are all kind of made to play similarly, and then it's different enough where, like we talked about before, if you make something dissimilar to something that you're used to, it's kind of an uphill battle.
Well, I mean, also, if you want to go into the 3D fighters, you have Tekken, you have Soul Calibur, Virtual Fighter. All of those feel fluid and smooth.
Yeah,
they feel smooth and responsive, and I have never felt that way about NetherRealms' work. Never.
That's something you're just gonna we're gonna talk about.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, it has its user base, it has its fan base that are gonna play it, and it'll be consistent. Match. It'll be consistent until the next NetherRealms release, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, forget Smash.
Actually, even Smash plays smooth. Smash actually...
It's all the same button. We're getting off track again, boy. doing it again.
I was going to say Smash is like the other way around. That thing's like controlling like a sports car that's just sliding in the rain.
Yeah.
That's how it feels to me, but I'm a lot more forgiving of Smash in that regard.
The game sucks. Anyway, back on track. We're not going to run this train through a building like we did last time.
Oh, that was a fun train to run, though. I stand by what I said. You know what? We ran that train like a train through North Coral.
Oh my god. Anyway, on that note, I'm gonna get back to what we're trying to talk about. Scary stuff, Jesse. Scary stuff.
Kind of scary stuff, James. Things that go bump in the night scary?
Nothing goes bump in the night. Anyway, scary stuff. So, talking about survival horror games. It's been around since actually 1984 was the first one.
Really?
Yes, it was called Sweet Home, and it was eventually remade, or like, it was more or less inspiration for what was later to become Resident Evil, as we know it, in 1996.
Really?
It involved a mansion in the woods that was haunted with weird demons and zombies and such, and there were a group of people were sent in to investigate, and then there were five of them. Each of them had their own specific characteristics. One was good at lockpicking, one was good at like puzzle solving, and so on and so forth. And the goal was to get through the mansion and solve the mystery within a fixed amount of time. But before we get to that, we got to talk about the overall concept of survival horror games. A lot of them, as you know or may not know, are based around as the things you hate about them: the controls, the allotment of ammunition, and overall, the atmosphere and cinematic, like, narrative. It's like playing through a murder mystery or a movie that you're trying to, like, you know, solve yourself, which can either help or hinder the game you're playing, because it can get really, 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 really convoluted really fast, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, how much Resident Evil did you play before you're like, nope, can't do it?
I would rather not honestly mention that to the stream at large, or to the viewer base at large stream.
Let me guess, you got to, like, the second zombie?
I mean, truthfully, James, I couldn't even tell when zombies are dead. There were times I literally unloaded all of my pistol ammunition into a dead zombie. I was bad at Resident Evil. I won't even joke about it. I will not try to defend it. I was terrible at that game. I mean, okay, to be fair, survival horror games have never been my forte. I mean, you can go back as far as, say, if you really want to count it as part of the genre, Friday the 13th back on the regular Nintendo, which, by the way, when you're going through that house and you're just like, we are Jason's prey, and then he jump scares you out of nowhere. I was about to drop an MF-er in there. I really was. I was thinking about it, and I was like, no, I gotta resist the urge.
Yeah.
No, when you would get into he would jump scare on you, and you'd have the boss battle with him, and because he's Jason Voorhees, he just beats the crap out of you. Oh my god. And I mean, or Nightmare on Elm Street. Both of those were like LJN games, I believe, back on the Nintendo, and those were just...
Actually, we had that, and my brothers would play it, and they would try and get me to watch them play, and I was horrified.
Oh my god, my experiences with both of those games, I could never play them by myself. Someone had to... And at least in the case of Nightmare on Elm Street, that was a co-op game. So, yeah. I mean, even still, I was kind of, like, terrified to play it by myself. Yeah, I had to have a friend.
Yeah, but then, like, back to what we're saying is, the whole genre at large is linear, and it's narrative-based, like, you know, like a horror movie. That was part of the big appeal of it was, let's take the concepts of a horror movie, and then let the player walk through it and solve it as it's going on. And the thing that I personally liked about it overall was just the whole ambience of it, especially the first Resident Evil and its bastard cousin Silent Hill, which did a way better job with the atmosphere. And the whole concept of it is if you play it, like sadly, like you said, if you go on gung-ho and you shoot everything you see, or even just one or two of them, you run out of ammunition, because unlike a classic like shoot-em-up game, there is a very fixed amount of ammunition that you find throughout.
Oh, yeah.
Which leads to the sense of, like, helplessness.
Well, I mean, and that's the first part of the genre. It's in there in the name, survival.
Yeah. Like I was saying, but if you're going and thinking, like, it's just a straight-up action game, I should just be able to run in there and shoot every single zombie or every single monster I see, and then, you know, be good. And that's one of the things I really like. Like, I think I brought it to you before, the whole goal in the games, especially the Resident Evil games, is to actually kill as few zombies as you can and save your ammunition for actual quote-unquote bosses or amped-up versions of the zombies while skirting around the regular ones and using inventive ways to get around them, which they drove home, but we'll get to that later, in the remake of the original Resident Evil, where if you shoot a zombie but you don't kill it, it comes back as a mutated zombie that's twice as strong, twice as fast, and does double the damage. So the goal is to not shoot zombies. The ammunition is a trap. It's like, oh, I got bullets, I'm going to shoot it. Psych.
Like, yeah, that ammunition is a last resort. That is your oh shit button, your break glass in case of emergency.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and then also there's other key things that happen in those games also, such as like the camera angles are literally designed to be cinematic. Like, you have parts of the game where they're fixed over your shoulder, parts are in isometric views, and again, it's to like convince you that you are in this really small, tiny, claustrophobic space. Like, again, a mansion. Because when you think about it, a mansion isn't really that big, but when the way they designed it, the mansion is huge, and how do you bring that back to being small and cramped? Did you put the camera in places where you could only see a fixed 90 degrees in front of you or behind you at a time? That's it.
Yeah.
Or 180, you see directly behind you, directly in front of you. That's all you got. It is maybe like 20 feet in the game. You can see that far. And also, again, with the ambience, the sounds that the zombies or the monsters make are just there to mess with your head and mess with everything you're doing for like the entirety of the game, however long it is, however long you play. If it's like 3 hours or 10 hours, it's just there to mess with you. And then we're going to bump up from here, and we're going to go to like some of the other things or other games of the genre, because like later on they become more genre bending, but Resident Evil is like the OG of that series. It also led to some pretty cool offshoots such as Onimusha and Devil May Cry, which came from accidents in the coding and just kind of ran with it.
Oh man, Devil May Cry. Now that one I did love.
Yeah.
Devil May Cry I loved because it actually played nothing like Resident Evil. It was less on the survival horror, more on the action framework, but there were a lot of those elements within it, certainly.
Yeah.
Macabre imagery, crazy fucking... And there's number three. We might have...
Yeah, we might as well just give up. This is R-rated.
I mean, if by now no one has realized that this is an R-rated podcast with an explicit content label, I ask you, what have we been doing this whole time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what we're doing. Back on track, like, Devil May Cry actually came out of two pretty awkward glitches in the programming on the way to Resident Evil 4. I don't know if you heard about that, but Shinji Mikami and the head designer developer were messing around with Leon and the shotgun that he had. And for some reason, when he shot the enemies, they would bounce. And it created like this weird, almost Street Fighter-like juggle. And they thought, well, that's pretty cool. How can we make like all the enemies bounce like this? So they started individually programming different things, and it slowly evolved into its own thing. And then it, like, you love that game because it's just running around with a giant sword and hacking things up.
Oh, it's completely fun. It's Twitch. I like to think of it as just stupid, brainless action gaming. I love it. I personally enjoy it. I like being able to find... I actually like the little style meter that they put into it, where the more cool ways you manage to kill your enemies, the more juggles you throw in, the more you just... try to make it look as stylish and as cool as possible, the game rewards you for it.
Yeah, and then like you have the other more or less expansion or offshoot of the game in Onimusha, which is another really cool concept because it takes Resident Evil, puts it back in feudal Japan, and uses all the demons of myth and lore of Japan and makes it another survival horror game. But more like Devil May Cry than Resident Evil, based on the dissimilitude of the games. And overall, it did a really good job of being really creepy, too. Did you ever play any of the Onimushas?
I did not.
Those would be way, way more into what you'd like. Because it's creepier almost to the level of Silent Hill, but it has the grace of movement of Devil May Cry. Like, the combos are easy to do. There's power-ups to get. It's all kinds of craziness. And I love those games. And now onto the second game of this series is standout.
See, I was going to say, by the way, how could you have a game that has the movement of Resident Evil but the fluidity of Devil May Cry? Because those two do not make any sense
together. It's so weird. Like, the movements I think around the time of the second game, then with the same change that Silent Hill did in Silent Hill 2, they're getting to in a second, where they actually added in 3D controls. So it moved more or less like a weird hybrid of the two, but it was fluid because you had combos. If you did triangle, X, triangle, or whatever, you would chain your moves together. So the combat part was really fluid. It was kind of clunky for the first time out, and like the first one, but again, that was the first time they decided to make said game.
Well, I was going to say, also going into those Capcom-style survivor game, or survival games, didn't they also have... Weren't they the makers of Dino Crisis as well?
Yep, Dino Crisis. I wasn't sure if I should mention that or not, but then again, it is just, again, Resident Evil with a different spin on it. It was like Jurassic Park meets Resident Evil. And the whole goal in the first game was to have Regina solve the mystery of what happened to the dinosaurs as well as killing them along the way.
Well, I was going
to
say, I thought immediately...
Kind of weird.
I thought a meteor hit the Earth. I thought that was the... I thought that's what did it. That's what happened to the dinosaurs, right?
Or either that or, like, dinosaur AIDS. Depends on who you ask. Either they died from disease or they died from a meteor.
All right.
Something like that. It was one of the two. But yeah, like... Yeah, and then there's also another offshoot. Like, I'm gonna just go through a couple really notable games of survival horror and what they actually did to help with, like, bringing it along. The next one is Silent Hill. The game that makes you think, and the game that makes you want to not think at the same time. Silent Hill had a lot of really cool additions to survival horror. Because, like, before that, they were just... I don't know, they're all science-based. So they're all, like, more or less love letters to George Romero with zombies or zombie-like creatures. This one dealt solely with, like, you versus yourself, or psychology, or what punishment... Like, what is... apt punishment for people, what is apt reincarnation and stuff like that. And also added in 3D controls. It was the first survival horror game to actually have 3D controls with Silent Hill. So no more turning like a tank. It did have some weird issues where Harry slid, but other than that, the game was amazing. I had one thing though that some people did complain a lot about though, and that was either, and it was really polarizing, and either you loved it or you hated it. Can you guess what it was?
No idea, unfortunately, on this one.
The fog effect.
That is... Okay. I would imagine if I were playing the game, it probably would have pissed me off.
Yeah.
It would have probably made me crazy, and I would have been, like, just miserable trying to play it. However, if you like survival horror, I could see that being a really cool feature to it. Something that just amps up the
overall
horror aspect of it.
Yeah. Because, again, like, it's one thing to hear a zombie and be able to see it 90 feet away down a corridor or just know it's there. But Silent Hill, like, if you've seen any other creatures, they're pretty messed up looking. The fact you can only hear them and you cannot see them when you're outdoors makes it an entirely different experience in the game overall. And you've seen some of the stuff or some of the creatures in the games, and they look like whoever came up with those had some very interesting dreams while they were coming up with creature design on a whole. Silent Hill brought a lot to the series, again, or a lot to the genre. Based a lot on, just again, man versus themselves, man versus religion. Like, and then in Silent Hill Homecoming, which me and you talked about before, it has some really messed up choices to make about, based on Alex's life. Like, do you forgive your father or do you kill your mother? Do you do this or do you do this? And you come to the crazy realization that you actually let your brother die and you caused a lot of it. It's like in Silent Hill 2, it's you killed your wife. Spoiler alert. Sorry, I might have ruined that for some of you who were possibly going to play that game. But, yeah.
Also, in other spoiler news, Aeris dies.
Oh, yeah. Poor girl. She doesn't make it out to the first disc, right?
Nope.
No, yeah.
Keep going. Sorry.
But yeah, like, the overall, the whole concept of that game is like judgment and redemption, or judgment and punishment in pretty much every single game. And then 3 also had a really cool story arc because it's based about destiny. Like, just because I was born to be the vessel of this thing, do I really have to do it? And if I run away, because the whole thing is Heather realizes that that's her destiny and she ends up trying to run away, but she ends up being drawn back to Silent Hill. So, like, no matter what she does, Heather or Cheryl or Sharon, whatever you want to call her, she ends up back in Silent Hill. And it's a pretty cool concept. And again, that's what I really liked about Silent Hill was, you know, all of the things that makes you think about. Like, what am I in charge of? What will happen if this happens? What will happen if this happens? And then it has a really cool narrative. And then, like, all of those games, though, which we'll get to in a minute, they all have this one fatal flaw that they always go back to, and it really, or that they become later on, and it pisses me off, kind of, to no end. And they all end up becoming action games later on down the line in their series. Somehow. And then we're going to talk about a couple more things, and then we'll go to this last thing.
That's a lot of things.
It is a lot of things. It's a lot of things. Eternal Darkness. Jesse.
Oh, that fucking game. Yeah. That...
if Hideo Kojima made a survival horror game,
Kojima.
That would be it. Oh
my god,
that
it's
would
like
definitely be it.
It's like if Kojima, Yamaoka, and Mikami, even though the three of them did not act, funny enough, that was actually that was developed by Silicon Knights, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Thank you.
Wikipedia. Yeah, it was
well, no, actually, that one I remembered offhand, but if I'm not mistaken, and I'm looking it up now on Wikipedia, that's actually what's going on. Silicon Knights, that was a Canadian developer. That wasn't even a Japanese one.
I mean, it was one of those things where it was kind of like how Resident Evil was a love letter to George Romero. That game was a love letter to Hideo Kojima.
Yeah.
It was one of the, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but it seemed like one of the first 4D alternate reality games. Because you're playing along with the game. Well, no, I guess Metal Gear Solid 2 has that too. You're playing along with the game.
Funny enough, since you bring up Metal Gear Solid, by the way, Silicon Knights, the people who did Eternal Darkness, they were actually the team responsible for also making the Metal Gear Solid. Yep, on the GameCube. That was them.
Yep. Yeah, like...
how it all comes full circle.
Yeah, it was literally like a love letter to Hideo Kojima. Like, if he were to ever make a survival horror game, because you'd be playing the game, and all of a sudden you'd see the volume slider on your TV pop up, and the volume would start turning down, and then you'd go to best of the team and realize, wait, that's what my volume slider looks like. And it had the insanity bar, and depending on how much stress your character was in, it made them see things. It made your character drop things. It made their head fall off a few times.
That I actually like. No, I always thought the meanest one, and I remember reading about it, was if you walked into a room and there's all these ammo clips everywhere, and you're like, oh my god, I'm going to be able to... oh yeah, I'm going to kill me some zombies. They ain't going to survive this. Everything's dead. Everyone's going to die. So you grab everything, and then you leave the room. And then the whole screen transitions, and it's you standing outside the room again. You open the door, there's no ammo. You check your inventory, no ammo.
Yeah, there's no ammo. Yeah. Oh, man. It brings back memories of me throwing my GameCube controller across the room. There's also, the other thing I thought was cool is, it travels throughout history, throughout the games. They're not just, the narrative is really linear, but, as you play through the chapters, you go from different periods of time, which I thought was a really cool concept too. Like, it's a through line of each, you're constantly trying to solve a similar puzzle that's more or less the same the entire way through, but it keeps it fresh by showing you new locales. And since we've already said it five times now, the mind fucks throughout the game. Man, my head just fell off.
I was gonna say, if I wasn't mistaken, the way the game worked, there were about four or five different areas you would visit, but you would visit them all in different time periods. So over the course of the game, each of those environments would change based on the time period you were in.
Exactly. Which I thought was a brilliant touch, because again, it's like you're trying to, it's like, how can we make you go through this 10-hour narrative and solve one puzzle and not have you lose focus or not have you give up on the game? I got it. We'll give it to you this way. So you see it in different time periods, and it actually does help. You don't even realize the game is that long or how long it's drawn on until, you look at your stats at the end of the game. It's like, wow. Or you just neurotically keep track of time. But it was an amazing game. And if you have the ability to get it, and you can find it for either the GameCube or on the Virtual Console for less than $80, get it. I saw it the other day. The used game store is like $90. But it is an amazing, amazing game. Amazing. And also, now we're going to get into some of the cooler entries to the genre. Actually, there's only one that we're going to talk about for real, and then one love letter back to the genre, which is made by the OG of the modern survival horrors. But the first one is Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, Jesus.
I brought this up before, but...
I'm never playing that game. I don't care. I hate jump scares. Jump scares, on a personal note for everyone out there, jump scares piss me off. YouTube videos where there's screamers or just jump scares, I hate them. I can't play them. I won't. You will. This one's on you. I have nothing nice or intelligent to contribute to this discussion.
No, you can contribute to the first part of the discussion.
That like, I hate them. That I hate
no,
them.
No. Well, the second part. Okay, so creepypastas and urban legends. Also, true things, which is the thing that makes this game even more fucked up, is that, okay, so growing up as early 90s, late 80s kids, we grew up with arcades. We grew up with the warnings of don't go alone in an arcade because you might get, you know, molested. You might don't talk to adults there if you're unsupervised. You know stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
That's what makes this game even creepier is growing up at a time where stuff like that actually was happening. Especially, like, kids were getting kidnapped out of arcades and Chuck E. Cheese's. And I'm going to tell you a story that will tell you why I have such an affinity for this game. And it's based on a lot of the creepypastas and urban legends based off of Chuck E. Cheese's, which Freddy Fazbear's Pizza is obviously based off of. You might not know this, I never told you the story. My third and fourth birthdays were at a Chuck E. Cheese in Akron, Ohio. That said, you know what my brother used to tell me when I was little?
What's that?
Do you remember the animatronics on stage at Chuck E. Cheese?
Yeah.
My brother used to tell me that at night, or if you were there by yourself, they would come off the stage and they would shove you inside of them and kill you.
Now, gee, that sounds awfully familiar. I can't imagine where I could have possibly heard that.
Exactly, like, it's just one of those things that even from a little kid's perspective, they looked wrong. They looked creepy. They moved wrong. So just based off that, it talked to this weird, like, piece of everybody who's ever been to a Chuck E. Cheese when they were younger, that it's almost like reliving it's like playing through your worst childhood memory or nightmare. Like, it's literally, that's what got me into the game, was like, this reminds me of those stupid-ass stories Kevin used to tell me when I was little. Like, every bit of it. There's the fact that the guy inside the suit is going to take me in the back room and kill me, which happens in Five Nights at Freddy's. There's the fact that the guy in the suit really isn't a guy. It's a robot walking around looking for someone to take in the back and kill him, or to stuff inside of it so it's not lonely anymore, or the guy's like some crazed pedophiles that'll take me away and I'll never come home. That's the basis of why I think Five Nights at Freddy's, if you play it, even if you're not a fan of survival horror games, or even if you're not a fan of games in general, it speaks to this weird thing of, it's almost like art imitating life, but making a parody of it to the point where the jump scares actually work, and the story inside of Five Nights at Freddy's works, because because again, stuff like that kind of happened in real life, where kids are getting snatched at arcades and stuff left and right for a while in certain cities. So that overall is the basis of why I like Five Nights at Freddy's. The other thing too is, like, I also like indie games a lot, and Scott took what could have been just like a crappy indies game that nobody would have played, and he made it in such a way that if you do play it, or even if you watch, that's the other crazy thing. And Five Nights at Freddy's is actually fun to watch other people play and their reaction to it.
Oh my god. Watching people play that game is like watching The Red Wedding. It's just like seeing how are people going to freak out next.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally like, it's just something about, because again, it's like watching other people's emotions to all this stuff happening around them and getting the pieces of the story is fun to watch, because again, it's this weird atavistic dread of, this is all of the stories that I've heard or read on the internet or heard about when I was little about what goes on at a Chuck E. Cheese, the animatronics and the robotic suits and stuff, and the narrative that I get to play through, and the whole thing is scaring me as an adult. And that's why I like that game. Also, again, like going back to it, it's at its base, it is a very almost classic PC point-and-click adventure. You just pick the 12 cameras, and you go around the building, and little by little, you find things out. And, like, aesthetically, it literally looks like if it's an old point-and-click adventure with the pre-rendered backgrounds, the characters, like, textures are pre-rendered and whatnot. But, again, the overall effect is perfect because of the jump scares. And then again, you hear about the story. It's tied to the jump scares and why each of the animatronics is different and why this does that. And like every time you make it through a certain night or you get one of the scripted deaths, you just play a mini game, which gives you a piece of the story. But that's why that is hands down one of my favorite survival horror games ever, or games in general, at least right now, is Five Nights at Freddy's, the series.
Because it was actually, it was such a simple premise, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you really, it's not like you're having to wander around anywhere. It is literally the definition of survival. You're trying to survive each night. That's all you're doing. And, I mean, the horror element does come from the jump scares. That's where it is. But you can prevent your, you can, again, prevent them from coming out. You can prevent them from nailing you each day.
Yeah.
Each night, rather. But, I mean, and all of that is you're effectively sitting in this one room. You're just observing a bunch of cameras and reacting to whether or not you see those little, those evil animatronics moving around. God, I hate them.
Exactly. Like, it talks like this is dread that everybody has. And it's either from experience or just, again, even in person, they're creepy. They don't look right. They don't move right. They don't sound right. And then, when you put it into perspective of they're trying to kill you, even though it's a virtual you, and it's all in first person, that's an even better idea. Because you could have easily made it a third-person game and gave you the ability to walk around, but it's the fact that you're at a fixed first-person perspective where you just have 180 left-to-right vision is amazing also.
Yeah, I mean, this is as good as your movement's getting. You are stuck here.
You get to see this, and that is it.
And I mean, with the second and the third one, they've added increasing... They've added a few additional gimmicks into each one to further add on to the gameplay so that you're not getting the same gameplay experience, or you're not getting, you know, just the same tired repetition each time. I think the second one introduced a helmet or a mask that you had to put over your head depending on...
Yes.
Depending on the animatronic that it was.
Yeah, because sir, I think it's not Foxy. Actually, it might be Foxy. Foxy would try and shove your body into an animatronic suit, which kills you.
What I thought it was is
I think it's Foxy.
I was gonna say, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I probably am. Certain ones of the animatronics would recognize the helmet from, you know, from the normal era by which it came from, so they wouldn't attack. On the other hand, the newer models kept in mind that, or the older models, one of the two, because God, that story is so fucked up.
Yeah.
There's number four.
For you. Oh my God.
The old, or the newer ones recognized that anyone with an animatronic head, one of the older ones could be one of the murderers, so exactly. They would attack on instinct. So thus, you had to run. You were running this juggling act, whether or not you had to wear this head or not, based on the animatronic. And then there was like a music box you had to play.
You had to wind it every. I think it ends up being every half hour in the game, so every like 45 seconds, you have to wind it all the way, or Chicky will come and kill you.
Yeah.
Guaranteed, no questions asked. Which is always a mess up one. Like, I can't even. Not even lie, the first three times I played Five Nights, I would get to like the or Five Nights 2. I'll get to the fourth day. And it'd be like 4 in the morning, I'd be so mad because I'm almost at the end. And I would think, like, did I rewind the music box and hear Chicky coming out of the vent killing him? It's like, damn.
It's like
every time. Every time.
God, that would get annoying, and I'd probably get mad and
never play the game again. I mean, as long as you click camera 11 and wind the tool, like the box, you're good. The cool one is, though, that the third one takes place 30 years in the future, and they turn Five Nights at Freddy's into a horror attraction, which is crazy. Which I thought was just like, why would you? Like, again, that was the one that almost lost me, because then it became like a cheesy MTV horror movie type thing. It's like, oh, we're going to do this and do this. And I actually played it, and oh my God, it's actually worse than the other ones. And then by worse, I mean better. Because, like, the animatronics aren't there anymore. And it has like this almost effect like Eternal Darkness, where if you get overly stressed or you start to panic and stuff in the game, quote unquote, you see hallucinations of the old animatronics coming to kill you, but they can't kill you because they're not there. They're not real anymore. They've all been dismantled. And throughout the game, you start to hear from your phone guy, like, oh yeah, we uncovered the back room where the killings took place in the thing. And in one of the phone calls, you hear you start digging up tapes and stuff and going through the tapes that you found. You hear the phone guy get killed by Springtrap. as he's confessing, like, yeah, you might want to find the tapes and do this, and I'm really trying to get to you. The whole time you hear the music box playing in the background, you're thinking, like, okay, this is 30 years in the future. That means it's like 2015. That means everything should be gone and taken care of except for this one suit that they keep talking about. And it kills him. It finds him 30 years later and kills him. Actually, we don't know how much later, but you listen to the tape of the guy getting killed. But anyway, like, it is like even bigger of a mind fuck, just because, like, it toys with, again, everything. It actually took a cool thing, because, like, people are getting tired of Five Nights at Freddy's. It came out with them so soon, back to back, and you put enough of a spin on this one that it just pulls you back in, because it's like, well, I thought we solved the mystery the first time. Ha ha, you were wrong. No, you didn't. Psych! Now you have to deal with Spring Trap's crazy ass. Ugh. Spring Trap.
Oh my gosh.
Scary.
Yeah, you know what? All I've just heard is I'm still never playing Five Nights at Freddy's.
You should, or at least,
you know, like... you know what? I can see that being our first big stream. Is that someone, you sit me down to play Five Nights at Freddy's? I can just see that.
No, we have to do it while you're inebriated, because that'd be even funnier.
We'll make like a dough. Oh god. We'll make it like a big donation thing, Jesse. If X amount of, we'll actually donate money to charity.
Yeah,
I would.
Every time
you know
say an F word, we'll donate $1.
Oh my god,
we'd be broke.
You know what? I would. No, seriously, this is legit. I would consider playing that game on a stream for charity if we raised enough money, and it would go toward, say, since we're based here in Louisville, Cozair Shriners or something.
Yeah, that'd be. We could do that. We totally.
If we raise like $100, I would. Nothing. Oh my gosh, I would seriously.
Play Five Nights.
I would seriously play Five Nights at Freddy's on stream, on a honest to god Twitch TV stream.
Yeah.
And oh my god, I would get. I can't do that. I don't. I know that the minute I make that promise, people will. Every friend of ours that listens, like, okay, how can we donate money? And the next thing you know, it's like, fine, here's my PayPal address. And then we raise $100, and then the next thing you know is I'm getting very upset playing this game. And I
gotta make it all the way to the end, all six nights.
Oh my god, I wouldn't last.
You don't even have to get the good ending. You just have to make it all the way to the end. That's it. It's the only thing you gotta do.
I can't even promise I would do that. That's the problem.
It's not that hard. I mean, there's enough Let's Plays on the internet where you can cheat and figure out what to do versus what not.
No, but I mean, I feel like that defeats the purpose.
Yeah, you gotta go into a blind and die like 100 times.
Jesus Christ. It's like playing Hotline Miami all over again.
Oh my god.
Like,
so
how many different ways can I get killed?
Yeah. So before we get to the last part, I'm gonna do a quick thing, kind of like honorable mentions about other games before we tie this up with the last one I really wanted to talk about, and they are Clock Tower, which was an amazing game series also, which had a lot to contribute to the development and advancement of survival horror, and also two games that we're going to talk about a little bit more in depth before I finish this up, Left 4 Dead 1 and 2 and Fear, because they were two game series that try to take it and put it in a first-person perspective, which is even harder to do. Because, like, when you have full control over what your character sees, you have to find new ways to make the game scary, beyond jump scares. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There has to be other ways. So, like, there are really cool triggered events where you get to a certain point in Fear where things would happen, like this little girl will pop up, and it would completely skew everything that's going on around you. But it also, to me, had the same issue that I was going to say that befouls all of the survival horror games. They get to a point where it becomes, it's still an action. It's an action game. It's not even survival horror anymore, which is why I know I'm going to get like a lot of flack for this later on. I do not like, which is going to sound like blasphemy to some people, I do not like Resident Evil 4 and forward, and I do not like some of the Silent Hill games because they become full-on action games after, or in this last, or yeah, the generation before last, you know what I mean? It kind of, yeah, I mean, like, Resident Evil 4, have you heard anything about Resident Evil 4?
Never, honestly, again, never played it.
Okay, so Resident Evil 4, as you may or may not know, was a huge hit because of the fact that it broke the mold as far as Resident Evil goes. And Resident Evil 4 also was in development for a long, long time. And the more they developed it, the less it was like Resident Evil, which is why there are offshoots of the game, such as which became Devil May Cry. At one point, Resident Evil 4, and I'll post a link later, I might even try to put it in, have you put it in the description for this, it's called Resident Evil 3.5. And it played more like Silent Hill than Resident Evil, which is weird because it dealt with this whole thing that happened and it guided into the series or like an offshoot of the series. Leon gets infected with the progenitor virus. And Resident Evil 4 was supposed to be Leon storming the castle, which was supposed to be the European headquarters of Umbrella, to get a cure for the progenitor. So that way he wouldn't become a nemesis or a licker or whatever he would transform into, because
things you never want to become in a Resident Evil game.
Yeah, because he's not infected with the virus. Again, he has a progenitor which mainly makes nemesis. And along the way, Leon starts to go crazy. And there's this thing called the fog that would envelop him. And weird supernatural shit would happen. Like, there's one point in the demo trailer where there's a deer head on the wall. And the deer head gets animated by the fog and it starts like moving around. And there's this creature called the Hook Monster, which kind of walks around like Nemesis wherever he goes whenever he gets too enveloped by the fog. And he chases him around with this whip chain, or this chain that has a hook on the end of it. And he tries to drag him down into the darkness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like take him over, take him into the darkness with him. Somewhere along the way, through playtesting, or it kept turning further and further into Devil May Cry, they're like, well, we'll scrap it. We'll start from the beginning. And from that point forward, Resident Evil 4 is more or less what Gears of War control-wise is based off of.
I was going to say, because at that point, it became more of an action survival game than survival horror.
Yeah, then it became, because like it got rid of all the things that made it a horror game in the basic sense. You have full control of Leon and a full 360-degree control. He has more, it's more like James Bond featuring zombie-like things.
Well, I was going to say, it's like looking at the difference between, say, the movie Alien and then Aliens, the sequel. Alien, which I think was directed by Ridley Scott, is a bunch of people on a spaceship trying to survive this predatory alien that they don't have any means or weaponry to deal with. It's a survival. They're trying to survive this creature that has them severely outmatched. Aliens, consequently, a bunch of them are on a colony that have been infected by aliens, but most of them are also Marines who have guns and flamethrowers and grenades and bombs and...
Yeah, and stuff that just takes out of the horror genre and makes it like a sci-fi game. Like, it was a really good game, and it deserves a critical acclaim that it got, but at the same time, it got so far away from what it wasn't really Resident Evil anymore.
It's almost like those games that you feel like they would be great games if they were named anything other than what they were called.
Yeah.
Like, actually, that's how I kind of look at, if we're going back for a movie analogy, Final Fantasy The Spirits Within.
Yeah, if they didn't have Final Fantasy attached to it, it would have been amazing.
But because it's called Final Fantasy, you go in with certain expectations, certain things that you are accustomed to seeing. And when those aren't there, it's like, what did I just watch?
Yeah, it takes away the whole concept. It took away the whole concept of limited ammunition because it became, again, like an action game. You shoot some of the enemies drop ammunition. You break crates, there's ammunition in the crates. Versus, like, no, I've counted before. There's, like, literally 20 boxes of pistol ammunition in Resident Evil, I want to say 2, for one scenario. That's all you have. So you have, like, 500 rounds for the entire game. The zombies take between 4 and 8 bullets, sometimes 12. The lickers take 12 to 20. Like, you know what I mean? So versus, oh, I killed this licker. For some reason, this licker has a box of machine gun ammunition inside of it. Huh. What do you know? But yeah, it kind of ruined it. And on that note, we're going to talk about The Evil Within.
That just came out about a month ago, I want to say.
It was about 6 months ago.
Oh, wow. I know it just based on the ad campaign where you had some poor guy laying down in a bunch of barbed wire going over their mouth. That much I remember about it.
Yeah, like, The Evil Within was made by Shinji Mikami because, like, a lot of things have happened, and again, to get kind of off track, even with Hideo Kojima and Akira Yamaoka, they wanted to continue making a game series, that they wanted to go in a different direction. And they're like, well, then I'll leave this studio, start my own studio, and make a version of the game I wanted, a la Bayonetta being the unofficial Devil May Cry 4 or 5, and this being more or less what he wanted to be of Resident Evil, which I actually like a lot. As much as I said that I didn't like about Resident Evil 4 with the fact that it was too action-y, this one takes it back a step. There's limited ammunition. The guns aren't over the top. Like, you don't have crazy, like, rocket launchers with infinite ammunition.
Nightmare
Beta. Oh, my God. You shoot once, it bounces around 100 times, kills everything in the room.
BFG 9000.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, like, it fixed everything. Because, like, you basically just have, as your main weapon, you have an old break barrel or break style revolver as your main weapon in that game. Even though it takes place mostly in modern settings, that's what you got. And you have, like, some improvised weapons and a couple long guns. But it tries really hard to reinvent the wheel that he made in the first place. Or, like, it literally plays like if you took – like, again, if he were still in charge of Resident Evil 4, this is what it should have been. It's creepy. It's messed up. The first 5 or 10 minutes have you stuck in, like, this slaughterhouse where you're about to get slaughtered, and you have to sneak out by finding a key to get out that's in one of the bodies, and it gets really, really messed up really quick, but it really is a good game that tried to stay true to the survival horror genre while making it action-y. The only other problem with that game is the ramp-up. Oh, my God. Difficulty-wise, even on the lowest difficulty setting, it's a little bit too hard. That might be because I've gotten babied by newer games and I'm not used to it, but it, all in all, it is crazy. And it's probably one of the best survival horror games that sticks closer to the genre as I played in a long time. And I'm glad that he made it. Hopefully we'll get a sequel out of it, or he can find some way to expand on it, but not. I just hope he doesn't accidentally fall in that web of, okay, it's more successful. What can we do to make it more successful? Make it where there's more ammunition and better guns. If he falls for that, I'll have lost all respect for that man entirely. But all in all, that's what there really is in survival horror games, is just the concept of you surviving against either insurmountable odds of the newer games, which is waves and waves of things, or like the original Resident Evil, where there's only 23 zombies in the whole game, and the goal is to not use all your ammunition, killing 10 of them. Because they don't have ammunition for the other weird shit, like the giant spiders.
Now,
giant spiders.
Now, I was actually, since we're still on this survival horror topic, horror yeah. Survival.
Same thing.
I was going to say, you've had the Resident Evil remake they had back on the GameCube as well. That just came out on, PS4 and Xbox One in HD.
Yes.
Like, which, by the way, I want to imagine this. Here's a game that started as a PlayStation 1 game that was remade with upscaled graphics, updated everything, controls for the GameCube, but they have now re-released in HD.
Well, I'll take that a step further. It has literally become the Final Fantasy IV of that series. It was made in 1997. To be remade in 1998.
Oh, that's right. You're right. I forgot.
With the Dual
Shock Director's
Edition.
Cut.
Yep.
The Director's Cut in the
Dual Shock Edition. Then remade 10 years later on the Nintendo DS as Deadly Silence. Then it was made as this monstrosity. Yeah, it's like literally the Final Fantasy IV of the series. And if you have the ability to play this version of the game, play it. Oh my God.
You know, I would sooner trust myself to be streamed playing that than
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah. Well, for one, I could actually do that for real. Thank you. Thank you, PS4, for your built-in streaming technology that is extremely accessible, and all I have to do is hit one button and
I'm
ready
to
go.
Five Nights at Freddy's is available on the PS4 because I have it on the Xbox.
I don't think it's mutually exclusive to one of those, but...
Yeah, but yeah, that game, actually, I was going to do some on-like stuff if you want to play those games. That is the definitive version of Resident Evil 1. As much as I hate to say it because it has some weird retcons to the story, but if you're playing it for the first time, it doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah.
But I will say this, do not use your pistol bullets on the zombies. I cannot stress that enough. Do not do it. in this game. Don't. It's not even worth it. Just run. Run from them.
I mean, I would just say it would be the first time that I would make it 45 minutes to an hour in the game and not lose my mind playing it. It would be
because there's no tank controls anymore.
It would be the furthest I'd ever get. I'd be so proud of myself.
Yeah, and just to do that real quick, because I know that some people like to hear honorable mentions about some of stuff, or things that, or how to play the games that we talked about. Like you just brought up, Resident Evil was re-released in HD on the Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS3, PS4. Also, if you have a PlayStation console, you actually have the luxury of playing every game in the Resident Evil library from 1 through 6 and the remake.
Oh, Lord.
Believe it or not. Yeah. All because PSN, there were PlayStation exclusives, therefore they exist in those libraries. So if you have access to those, go for it. And my picks in the Resident Evil series are 1, 2, and Code Veronica. I left out Nemesis for one reason and one reason only.
It's a first-person shooter?
No, Nemesis isn't a first-person shooter.
Oh.
What is
wrong? Oh, God. Oh, that was Survivor.
Yeah, you're thinking of Gun Survivor.
That's the only Resident Evil I actually played and liked.
You would like Revelations. Revelations is amazing. Revelations 1 and 2, Revelations 2 just came out, and that is really worth picking up, too. But just talking about the classic series, I left out Nemesis for one reason and one reason only. If you go from 1, 2, 3, and then Code Veronica, it will completely screw up your liking of Code Veronica entirely. It'll mess it up. Do not do that in that order. It'll literally make you mad. For two reasons. You know what those two reasons are?
What's that?
Even though it is a better designed game, and it looks better because it came out on the Sega Dreamcast, which was the best system still to this day, in my opinion, they were designed at the same time by two separate development teams. Resident Evil Nemesis was the beginning of it becoming an action game because it featured a reactive dodge button and a reactive roll button. So you can get out of Nemesis' way. You can actually dodge his attacks and stuff. Code Veronica was developed by the original development team of Resident Evil, so it has all the things you hate about it, Jesse. But if you go from 2 to 3 to Code Veronica, you'll be like, it looks way better, but it took a huge step back. There's no 360 spin. There's no dodge button. There's no roll button. You can't upgrade your ammunition as you go along like an action game. You're just stuck in survival horror. You have a fixed amount of ammunition. And also, Code Veronica did something unheard of for any game in a progressive series.
And that was?
It nerfed the weapons you have. Everything does 2/3 of damage it did in the games before, including the shotgun, which is blasphemy. I don't care what anybody says. The theme with every action survival horror game is a shotgun until you get a rocket launcher or a grenade launcher is the BFG. That's like holy writ. That's always the same except for Code Veronica for some reason. The shotgun is garbage. So 1, 2 in Code Veronica. Play 3 later. It's an amazing game in its own right. It literally took Resident Evil in a completely different direction. It made it stand out from Silent Hill, which was coming out around the same time. But at the same time, it will spoil your experience playing the games through. Then also 6, specifically for Leon's Mission and Revelations 1 and 2. All available that way. And I only think a couple of the Silent Hill games are available. Obviously, Five Nights at Freddy's, all 3 of them. And here's a tip when you play those, lights off. Lights off completely sober, or lights on and drunk, or lights off and drunk. I didn't think about that, but there are a lot of games out there.
I was gonna say it's actually really sad that I could probably do that. It's like, here, yeah, I'll play like this.
Sober in the middle of the day, or no, drunk in the middle of the day, all the lights on, you still would jump at all the jump scares in it. I don't think anybody can not jump at them unless they're a Vulcan entirely. But yeah, that more or less wraps up the survival horror episode. Again, if you want to catch up on any of the Resident Evil games and you have access to a PS4 or PS3, they're almost all available on the PSN. They are available on the Wii U, the Xbox, and actually the Wii U, the Xbox, and the PC for Resident Evil 4, 5, and 6 in the HD remake. Oh, and Code Veronica, for some reason, but I still don't understand, but I guess it's because it's a Dreamcast exclusive, so anybody can use X. There's no Sega anymore. And, yeah, you got anything to add, Jesse?
Not really, if nothing else, because I feel like I'm, again, unqualified to do so. One thing I would like to say, special shout-outs to our good stream, or our good friend from our podcast, Daisha. She just had her Smash Brothers event classes back this past weekend. From what I understand, it was a really big success. The event raised $672.73 for charity, and they were apparently targeting for $500. So they did exceed their goal. So big shout outs to Dacian. Congrats on that. May there be many, many more in the future.
Yeah. We need to go to one if we can.
That is actually a good idea. We should do that. Let's see. We will be updating again next Tuesday. We're going to try it this time. We're going, God willing, we're going to do it. We are going to stick to a good schedule. Next Tuesday should be our next podcast. And there's a game that has just come out on PSN that I've been really interested in trying. I'm not a big Metroidvania kind of player, but this one I've heard good things about. Axiom Verge.
Yeah.
An indie game that is definitely focused, that has a very heavy Metroid feel to it. I'd like to give it a shot. At least give it a try. And speaking of indie games.
Yeah. Keep a lookout for it, because hopefully in the near future I'll be interviewing, and Jesse will be in on it too. We'll be interviewing some of the indie devs that live in our area. Apparently there are a lot of them. And they make some pretty good games. I got a chance to sit down and play a lot of them. And I'm going to talk to them. We could even do it one by one if they're willing to do it, but we're going to start with Two Scoops.
Two Scoops?
Two Scoops Games. They made an amazing game. It's a platformer. It has a really cool concept. It's kind of like Qbert, but not. Like, as you progress through the stage, parts of the stage that you've touched get eliminated. You can't use them to get back across the maze you just crossed.
What is the name of this game?
It's called Squeaks and the Emerald Burrito.
Squeaks and the Emerald Burrito by Two Scoops Games?
Yes.
Well,
Stanley Squeaks. Stanley Squeaks.
Stanley Squeaks and the Emerald Burrito.
It is a great game. Like, it plays really well. The controls are really tight. And they just released a new demo of it. And I'll have you put that in the description of this episode. But yeah, hopefully soon we'll be interviewing them. And then we're going to be interviewing, hopefully, also Amanda Wallace, who made an awesome game as well. We'll talk about that more in the future. But yeah, indie games. It stuffs.
All right, well, with that being said, I believe our episode has reached its inevitable conclusion, and we actually kept it under, I think, what, 5 F-bombs?
I don't know about that. But, you know, yeah, we did it. We did it, Jesse. We did it.
Wow. We did it. We gave 5 nights of fucks.
Congratulations, we kept it under X amount of F-bombs, passes the threshold.
It's like, my God, we're finally becoming adults. We're doing it.
Actually, I think that is true that we are not, and you know what? Fuck it. I don't care.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jesse, this is James. We have been the Team Rocket Podcast, and this is us blasting off again.
Don't play it.
And now I'm not going to turn off my lights for the rest of the evening. Thanks, James.
You're quite
welcome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Goodbye.